Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Audio bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by Winamp. Subscribe to Net at Night and all your favorite podcasts with the ultimate media player. Download it for free at winamp.com. Video bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leon Laporte, episode 167, recorded September 7th, 2010. A world without email. Net at Night is brought to you by GoToAssist Express. If you're in tech support, save time and money by supporting your clients and colleagues remotely with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit GoToAssist.com/night. It's time for Net at Night from Petaluma, California. I'm Leo Laporte.
And from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, I'm Amber MacArthur.
Hello, Amber MacArthur. How are you?
Good, Leo. It's nice to talk to you again.
Nice to see you as always. How's the heat wave in Toronto? Has it cooled off a little bit?
It has cooled off, Leo. Okay. It is, today it's quite warm, but the next few days are definitely fall weather is coming around. So I'm not complaining, though. I feel as though we got a lot of great heat over the past few months, and I kind of like the fall. I like the seasons.
I do, too. And that's one thing I miss in California is we don't really have seasons. We have two seasons. It's raining or it's not raining. And that's
I definitely like the fall. I like the winter a little bit. And then come January, though, January till I think March are kind of the worst months here. But everything else is not too bad. And when I lived in San Francisco, I definitely missed having the seasons because I just felt like it was like Groundhog Day. You know, the weather was kind of the same all the time and I had no sense of time or change. And sometimes the seasons help you a little bit with that.
Do you get the autumn leaves change there in Toronto? Does that happen?
Yeah, they definitely do.
I love that. I
know. There's something cozy about it. You know, you just on a cool fall day, you put the fireplace on for the first time and you just kind of hunker down for the winter. So I'm a fan, but ask me again, Leo, in February. I will probably change my mind.
I know you will. Absolutely.
I will. Don't worry.
Hey, I saw a news story that just kind of made me sad because it reminded me of you and me in our younger, naive and innocent days. When you suggested you showed me for the first time a new blogging site called Vox, V-O-X.
I know.
And I used it. I loved it. I fell in love with it. I thought, this is so great.
Yeah, it's definitely a great service, but unfortunately, people won't be able to use it anymore after September 30th. They Six Apart is shutting down the service, and as I think of now, they aren't allowing any new people to register. As of the 15th, if you have an account, you will no longer be able to post on that account. Now, they've offered some easy ways for people to take the data and transfer it over to TypePad, for example.
Is TypePad free?
I believe it is. I think you have to pay for it. I always paid for it, but maybe I just had the pro version, and that's why there might be a simple free version.
Yeah, you know, I have to wonder because Vox had some really nice features, but it was ad supported. There were a lot of ads on there, but you did at least have this great privacy setting where everything you posted could be for every. And I recommend it to a lot of people for this reason alone: for everyone, just friends or just a tight circle of family. So you had three different privacy settings on every single post. It was really easy to upload media to. But you know why I stopped using it? And I did stop using it a few years ago because I was worried I didn't own, you know, the content wasn't stored on my server.
Yeah. And, you know, also, I mean, when you say that it's great because it's a private place, one of my friends started using it. And after a few months, she said, you know, this just isn't for me because I actually am finding it difficult to make my information more public. And I want people from the outside to comment, but they need to register. And
that's
she
true.
Said it was a little clunky.
Although I like that, too, because the commenting was always much higher quality because you had to register. You couldn't just be somebody from out of nowhere commenting.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's, you know, with so many great tools out there to build your own site. I mean, we talk about Squarespace all the time. It just seems like Vox, you know, maybe just didn't stand up to the rest. Sad news, because I know a lot of people loved it. It was super easy to get your site up and running. That's one of the reasons I think we started using it, is just to show people that, hey, this is one of the best tools out there at the time.
You know, probably killed it, really, is Posterous and Tumblr.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because those are free, very easy to use. You know, very simple. And they're not ad laden like Vox was.
Mm-hmm.
And now Posterous for a while was doing this a new importer every day, And I bet you they have a Vox importer, so you could probably go to Posterous, P-O-S-T-E-R-O-U-S.com and get your blog ported over. In fact, I know they do because I did that. Because I still had images and stuff on Vox that I wanted to save somewhere else.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, I don't know how many users they had. I haven't seen any recent stats on Vox, but I imagine they had quite a few people. I mean, most of the tools that they launched were quite successful.
Yeah, I loved Vox.
I know. I know it happens though, Leo.
That's what happens, and that's it kind of reassures me that I was right in my basic thinking, which is ultimately I want to store my content on my server because these things come and go. And that's why I moved off Vox finally. And so, and by the way, it was a pain at the time to get all my stuff out of Vox. I had to write a script and it was hard work.
Oh, that's not good either. Yeah. Anyway, well, so you have till September 30th to get rid of your content if you're using it and transfer somewhere else, because after that date, you'll no longer be able to access your blog. So make sure if you have a Vox account that you get started and get thinking about where you're going to go next.
And, you know, if you're on Facebook, you should think about that because a lot of people, that's their web presence. And Facebook controls, and I don't think Facebook's going to go out of business anytime in the next, say, 100 years. But I do think, and people, I've seen this happen, sometimes Facebook can get mad at you and block your account.
Yeah, that's not good. But Leo, there's another reason for people to go onto Facebook now.
Oh, please. You're going to blame me for this, aren't you?
Yes, you have your own page back on Facebook.
I have a private personal page. And so what happened was, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I felt like I couldn't report on Facebook without a Facebook account. So I created a dummy account, like a dummy, to see what the settings were. And then Places came along, and I thought, oh, well, I have to try Places. And then Places doesn't make any sense unless you have other people that you're following. So I friended some people. They keep pulling me in. And, you know, I have to say, this is why I don't like Facebook. Tell me if I'm wrong about this.
Okay.
But I think Facebook is built on social obligation. The feeling that if you're not on, it's like not having an answering machine or not having email. If you don't have Facebook, people go, huh? Don't you like me? Don't you, you know, there's this huge sense of you've got to do it. And then the obligation gets worse because then people message you and I have all these messages in my inbox. I don't need another way for people to message me.
And I wish you couldn't do that on Facebook. Oh. If I could remove that from Facebook, I would. I wish it was just the wall and commenting and sharing. I hate the inbox and I would like to deactivate it.
Yes. And people keep friending me and you know, I don't want everybody in the world to be my friend. So that means I'm ignoring people. There's this, Facebook is filled with emotional drama.
Guilt. And guilt.
Lots of guilt. And I think that's why people are even on Facebook is guilt as much as anything.
So, no, I think you're right.
It just drives me crazy. And then, of course, if you're a brand, am I a brand? I guess I'm a brand.
Yes.
If you're a brand, I'm sure you say this in your book, you got to have a page, a Facebook page.
Well, Facebook pages are great because then no one can actually send you a message.
This is Power Friending 101, Amber's book.
Yeah, so that's the good part about it.
I created a page for V. Leo Laporte. That's like the fan page, right? Mm-hmm. And then I created a page for Twit Network. And, you know, this is complicated. I think people who have never done this, we should write a little primer for this. I have a friend who has a restaurant. I said, well, you got to have the restaurant page. She said, well, I created a profile. I said, no, you don't want a profile. You need a page because the profiles are limited to 5,000 people. Pages are unlimited. You don't have to worry about email. But you can't get a nickname for a page until you have 25 friends. So you've got to somehow publicize your page and then go to facebook.com/username and hope that the name you want for your page is available. And you can only change it once.
So, I know.
So you got to do it right. It's very, you know, this is tricksy. And it seems like they change it a lot, too. So it's not like it's always the same.
They do. And you know what? I will say, out of all of the different social networks that I've used, and I've used a lot, that I think that Facebook is the most difficult to navigate.
Oddly
from
enough,
privacy
yes.
to page creation. It really is so complex. I mean, they don't make it easy for anyone. I mean, the whole idea, I had to explain to a client once how you had your personal account and then you set up a Facebook page, just like you said, off that account. But then they were wondering, you know, well, I guess someone wanted to share information with them and where would that be shared? And right. It was very confusing. And I even had that my own conversation with Facebook, where I said, okay, well, now that I've accepted any friends I want and I have a fan page, you know, I might as well just have a fan page, because there's no point in having a personal account because I've accepted all of these people, right? There's nothing private about it. But I still can't get rid of that personal account. It's not ideal.
That's why
but everybody's there.
I'm glad I deleted my personal account. I got a reboot.
See, that's good. It's good. Anyway, I think it's good for you to be on there just because so many of your fans are on there. So from a...
Again with the guilt.
I know. You know what? You know Jenna, my best friend in the world. You've met her many times. She's not on Facebook, which is so funny because every single one of our friends is on Facebook.
And what do they say to her? Do they guilt her every time they see her?
She doesn't care. She just says she doesn't have time for it. However, Leo, I will say that she comes over to my house and I'll have Facebook up on in the browser, and she'll be like, okay, can we check out what this person is doing? So she doesn't want to get involved in it. She doesn't want to have her own persona there, but she wants to see what's going on. She's like a lurker. Those are the worst kind.
Well, and then there's weird stuff happening. Like there's this event invitation that I got and I never said yes to, but it keeps showing up in my stream and it's in Chinese, so I don't even know what it is.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
so
weird.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know if that's a bug or what. I keep removing it and it keeps showing up. Ay, 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 caramba.
Huh.
See, there it is again.
It's still there?
Yes, no, I don't want to go. Go away. I'm not attending. But now, because I said I'm not attending, it continues to show up in my events.
You can find all of the bugs and all of
the stuff. See, look at this. Offer. This month, it's ongoing. I got two things that I'm not attending, but they're in Chinese. I don't even know what they are, and they're in my events thing. They've been in there since I started. That's a bug, right?
Yeah, that's strange.
I figure if I can't figure this out, my mom has no hope. Most people have no hope. I'm supposedly, I know this stuff.
Yeah, you know, I will say, though, my father-in-law recently got on Facebook, and he's 70, and he has kind of learned it inside out. But
to turn down a Chinese invitation.
Yeah, who knows what will happen. But Leo, also, some other interesting news on the social media side. I haven't seen many reports recently as far as stats from Twitter, but this one kind of surprised me. They've just surpassed 145 million users.
Now, that's interesting, because Facebook's like half a billion. That's a big deal. This isn't shabby.
It's not insignificant anymore.
That was, and 4 months ago, it was 105 million. Mm-hmm. So they're adding 300,000 new users a day.
Wow. It's awesome. Yeah, and it's interesting. The Mashable article points to the Twitter for iPad app, saying that that might be one reason they're, you know, also getting more users, although that's fairly new. Although I will say that Chris was talking to me and we were looking at the Twitter for iPad app, and I'm sure you and Sarah have talked about it. It's a beautiful app.
Yeah, not my favorite, though. I'm still an Usfora fan.
Oh, really?
Do you know Usfora? Usfora.
No.
Usforahd. It's a, I think, just a little bit prettier.
Okay.
My favorite. But Twitter's free. Usfora's not. You know, you might be right, because if you think, okay, so Android, Google says 200,000 activations a day. Apple, on their event last week, said, well, we have 230,000 activations a day. So that's 430,000 new smartphones starting up. I bet you half of those people sign up for Twitter, because both phones come with Twitter pretty much, right?
Yeah. So they're growing. I mean, there was a time not that long ago where people used to say, oh, okay, Twitter is just for early adopters and it's not really mainstream. But I'm finding now, I mean, it seems like everybody I know is on Twitter. It doesn't matter what they do. They've seemed to adopt it because, Leo, as much as they may be on Facebook too, Twitter is easier to use than anything.
Right. Twitter is testimony to simplicity wins, even if it's dumb, because Twitter is terrible for conversations. Twitter, you remember my complaint about social media is it's everybody talking at once. You can listen on Twitter, but go ahead and try to have a conversation. It's a pain. And you got to do the at sign, and then you do it, and the conversation scrolls off. Somebody may have said something, but unless you're paying close attention, you may miss that. It's a very asynchronous conversation with bits and pieces spread out all over. It's not a conversational medium. And yet that's how people use it, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I find that now even someone will reply to something that I posted, but I sometimes forget, I have no idea what they're replying to because I maybe post it more than once a day, most likely. And so it's not great for having conversations, but it's simple. And I mean, if you're sitting around with your smartphone, it's probably one of the easiest tools just to use and push out content. So that could also explain the really quick growth as of late.
That's probably, I mean, simple is, you know, when you show people Facebook and they see how complicated it is, even things like Buzz, it's just too complicated for people. Twitter they can get.
Right away, yeah.
Yeah, and really, Twitter doesn't require, let's be honest, doesn't require engagement. Twitter just requires you spewing. And most people, when they first get on Twitter, that's what they do with it. They don't attempt to create conversations. They do the silly, obvious thing, right? What I had for lunch kind of thing.
Yeah, they just post stuff and wait for something to happen. So that's pretty common as well.
Have you been to Google this morning? Did you go to Google.com?
Yes, I did.
Is that wild?
It is very cool.
Look at it. It's so strange. It's like this, and nobody can figure out what it is. There's some theories. So what it is, for people who are not watching the video, is when you go to Google, and it's only today, September 7th, so don't go tomorrow. If you're listening to this tomorrow, you get Google in the logos in dots. And then if you try to click on it, because usually when I see Google Doodle, I click on it, right? Like Buckyballs a couple of days ago. And it went to the Buckminster Fuller search, and it was a really cool doodle. This one is kind of a little less obvious, because when you try to click on it, the balls move away. It's mouse adverse. And somebody even wrote that if it's accelerometer enabled. So if you have a computer with an accelerometer, you could shake it. It's HTML5, so it could be just Google, you know. They just tweeted we're having a boisterous week. So it could have something to do with their big announcement tomorrow. I don't know. It could be just they're promoting HTML5. It could be, there's a couple of other theories. Google incorporated on this day, September 7th, so maybe it's celebrating their incorporation. There was one other theory. I can't remember what it was. I'll look it up. But that's, I don't know. Google, I think, is kind of getting more fun out of these than they used to. They used to just be like Abe Lincoln for Lincoln's birthday.
Yeah, I know. But that one was kind of neat, I think. But
it's fun.
Yeah, it is definitely fun. And, you know, they've done some creative things over the past couple of years, but I tend to not pay as much attention to them anymore. There's just too much other good stuff.
Well, I never see Google's front page anymore, right? If I do a Google search, it's usually on iGoogle or something. I very rarely, I have to actually explicitly go to the, quote, classic home. So PC World says one theory is that Google incorporated September 7th, 1998. But here's another one. JavaScript, and this is all done in JavaScript, right? Was released September 1995 by Netscape.
Ooh. Interesting.
So could be the birthday of JavaScript, 15th anniversary of JavaScript.
That's so funny you say, you know, talking about not going to Google's homepage anymore, because I do the same thing now that I'm using Chrome. I just search in the address bar. And so it's funny because then all of a sudden I'll open Safari or Firefox and I'll try to search in the address bar and I'm like, why is it not working? Because I forget. It becomes such a habit for me and I love it.
So you're a Chromer?
Yeah, I love Chrome.
Me too.
I really do.
Chrome is the best.
It's my favorite.
Hey, we got a guest coming up in just a little bit. I don't know anything about this guy. You booked him. His name is Luis Suarez. He is in charge of, what is it, social networks for IBM?
Yeah, he works for IBM. I think he's called a knowledge worker. But the interesting thing about him is that I read this article yesterday on Mashable, and the article is called A World Without Email, One Man's Vision of a Social Workplace. And they did this great profile of him. He is, they say, living the dream, and he's trying to figure out a way to live his life on the professional side without email. So he's reduced 90% of his incoming email by communicating through social software, and it's something he's trying to practice and talk about with other people at IBM as well. And so he has everything, like little charts that he's done to talk about how he's done it. And I thought this would be great, you know, not just for us, but for other people out there, because we've talked about it many times, that email is such a burden on many people as far as them thinking it's a productivity tool, when at the end of the day, it's kind of wasting your time and you always have too much of it as well.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk to him in just a little bit. Also, we've got our video of the night and an update on Life in a Day, that YouTube project. Before we do all that, though, can we talk a little bit about our friends at Citrix and GoToAssist Express? I've been using GoToAssist longer than anybody alive. No, that's probably not true. But a long time since the Screensavers days, more than 10 years, we started using GoToAssist to help people on the air. Well, boy, they've sure come a long way. GoToAssist Express is so sweet, fast, easy to use. Unlike other remote access, I got social media on the mind. Unlike other remote access tools, you don't have to have it installed ahead of time on your customer or support ease computer. I'll give you an example. I'm talking to my mom. I'm on the phone with my mom. No, maybe I was on Skype. I was on Skype with my mom because it's free. And she says, oh, I can't figure out where my Quicken data has gone. So I said, no problem. I fired up GoToAssist Express. I pasted a link for her into the Skype chat. She clicked the link. Within 30 seconds, the software installed on her computer, and I was in there. And I said, here, Mom, here's where it is. And I set it up so she wouldn't have to remember that, and it would work from now on. I mean, it's just things like that. GoToAssist is really designed for the support professional. If you're in the support business, if you're an IT professional, go to GoToAssist.com/night right now, and you can try this free for 30 days. I will warn you, if you start using it with your clients, you're going to get hooked. They're going to get hooked, and you're stuck. So don't show anybody because they're going to say, oh, whatever that was, do that again. That's what my mom says. Whatever that was, do that one again.
So easy.
I've tried other ones. This is easy. Oh, Mac, PC. You can support a PC from a Mac and vice versa. And you can have up to 8 sessions at once. Unattended sessions, which is nice. I don't have to wait till mom's home. You can drag and drop files from your computer to her computer if you've got a fix, a patch, an update. You can also get an assay of what's going on that computer, what operating system, what software is running on the background. All these are things that support professionals really need. And, of course, end-to-end 128-bit encryption, so mom could be at a Starbucks on an open access point. Doesn't matter. It's safe. Free customer support for you 24/7. And Citrix does a really good job with their support. Why don't you try it free for 30 days? GoToAssist.com/night. What do you got to lose? GoToAssist.com/night. We thank them so much for their support of the Net at Night program. You want to do this Life in a Day link, and then we'll get Luis on the line here?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm sure you probably have heard about this before, Leo, the Life in a Day project on YouTube. But that was launched in part by executive producer Ridley Scott. He did Blade Runner, among other movies. And the idea is that he has encouraged people to come to YouTube and submit little video clips. And he will use those video clips in a feature film, a documentary that will be released at Sundance in January. And they've just announced that they received over 80,000 submissions.
Oh. Now, did you do one?
I didn't do one, but the cool thing is, what I love about this, and I was playing with it earlier, is the way that you can view the submission. So if you go to youtube.com/lifeinaday, then you can check out this amazing globe where you can dig down and you can sort through all the different videos submitted based on time of day, mood, type of place, and all of this other content. So it's fun, just a different way to search and explore such a wealth of great video content.
This is so neat. So different tags, Loving, for instance. Let's see Loving. So these are the Loving videos. And then I guess you have other tags associated with it. Wow, this is amazing. So this all happened on July 24th all around the world, and they're going to make a movie out of it. Now, these aren't ones that are accepted necessarily. These are just...
No. No, my understanding is that he is going to go through with the editor and director and sort through all of the content they got, try to pick the best ones because there are so much great content out there, and put together this documentary. So it will be interesting to see how they do it. I mean, how they kind of keep the flow going, because, you know, watching these little clips, a bunch of them for more than 5 or 10 minutes, I think could get a little boring. But I imagine Ridley Scott has a great idea and creative way to be able to do this.
I remember in his video, Keith McDonald, who is one of the other director who's working on this, gave us a bunch of questions we could answer. So that's one way they could organize it, is take all the answers to a question, I guess. But then a lot of this stuff, as I'm looking at it, is just this is what happened today, or this is, you know, my little bit of the world.
I know.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I'd hate to be the one who has to put this.
Oh, me too. But I think the coolest thing about it is not necessarily the documentary. It's actually the interactive way that you can sort through all the videos.
Yeah, I love this. By the way, HTML5, I'm sure. I don't think that's Flash. Maybe it is. Let's see. Oh, it is. Never mind. It's Flash. YouTube has said, we're not abandoning Flash. We like HTML5. Google likes HTML5, but we're not Oh, look, you can do a sphere, matrix, geotags, or heat map. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that. I'm watching what you're doing.
Yeah, so this is where they got the most submissions from. Look at that. The red is where they got the most. Lots from India, Pakistan. That's cool. Geotags. So you can go by geotag. Matrix, I guess, is just a square. What's the smile? Let's press it and see what a smile is. Oh, it's an ad for LG.
You knew that would happen soon.
Okay. LG is one of the sponsors. That's funny. Very neat. We'll introduce our guest while I get him on the horn. What do you say?
All right. So we're going to get Lewis on the line. I believe he is in Spain right now. It's a little bit late there, but he has agreed to join us to help all of us figure out a way that we can live our dream of being email free.
Email free, baby. You know, I Hopefully did a kind of help. A form of email bankruptcy because I moved off of my IMAP server to Gmail. And, of course, I didn't take any mail with me.
Oh,
and the
nice.
Reason I did it is because of that new priority inbox. Have you played with that?
Yes. No, I haven't played around with it too much, Leo, actually. But are you liking it?
Yeah, I love it. I love it so much that I said, May, I should use Gmail from now on. I miss kind of having Apple Mail or, you know, a desktop client. But you can get Gmail into your desktop client. So I did that. But the priority inbox is pretty accurate. I guess I could show you mine. I don't think there's anything secret in it. So you see, instead of, by the way, I hid my inbox by dragging it to the hidden part and I click priority inbox and things are sorted important and unread, starred. So as I star stuff, it gets put in starred and everything else. And if I see something that I don't care about like that, I'll just archive it. If I see something in here that I shouldn't be, for instance, important, like let's say that, I can say, no, that should just go in everything else. It does a pretty good job of figuring out what's important mail, so I don't miss mail from mostly from my boss. Lisa is our CEO, and I wouldn't want to miss that. So anyway, that's one solution. That's the technological solution.
I like it. I'm going to try it out. I've been waiting to get it, actually. I think I just got it yesterday, if I'm correct.
Yeah, everybody in the U.S. has it. So Luis is on the line. Hello, Luis. Thank you for joining us. It's so late in the evening.
Hi, Leo. That's all right. That's no problem. Can you guys hear me okay?
We hear you great.
Hi there. Thanks for coming on.
Terrific. Thanks, Amber.
So how come IBM has a social computing evangelist? What does that mean?
Wow, it's not just one. We have got hundreds, if not thousands of them.
Wow.
Yeah, seriously. And, you know, the interesting thing is that most people think that IBM is just getting on board with social software tools, and we actually have been using them since 2000. It's just that, you know, we didn't feel that we had a need to go and publicize them out there, and now probably sounds like a good time. I mean now, like, for the last 5-6 years or something like that. So, we have got a whole bunch. In fact, that's actually what I do as a full-time job. I help evangelize my colleagues into making use of social software as business tools, both inside and outside of the firewall. And I have got a group of people that I work with across the globe. And we do have as well a satellite community of around 1,200 people right now worldwide in 45 countries.
I guess in some ways Lotus Notes is an early form of social software, isn't it?
It is. Well, you know, depends on who you talk to, right? It introduces the concept of groupware, which is basically about collaboration. And if you talk about social software as tools to collaborate, certainly. And you know, there may be some people out there who also claim that the oldest form of social software is actually email. No, it's not something that I'm very fond of because I think that it misses some of the fundamental philosophy behind it. But certainly that was probably as close as social we could get 10 years back, for instance, right? When we didn't have all of these tools. When we probably had just forums, and between forums and email and instant messaging, that was how we got social, kind of thing.
Now, at what point did you decide that you were going to try to get rid of your emails? Was there a moment where you just looked at your inbox a few years ago and said, I cannot handle this anymore? Because believe me, I've had those moments.
Yeah, that was actually 2.5 years ago. There were three main reasons why I did it. The first one was that I was no longer feeling productive, and I'm sure that most people out there will feel the same way with their email boxes. And the main reason why I was not feeling productive was because email to me became a delegation machine to basically do the someone else's job without doing my job,
right?
Or people telling me, yeah, can you do this presentation, or can you help me solve this problem, or talk to this customer, whatever. And sometimes there were easy enough requests that they could fulfill them themselves, you know. So I said, I'm having enough of this crap, and I'm not taking, you know.
I'm not taking this anymore.
You're my hero right now.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Wait a minute. Did you replace it with something email-like? That's what I'm worried about.
No. Well, you know, if you consider social software as email-like, yes. Most of my interactions, in fact, except two scenarios that I still process through email. One of them is calendaring and scheduling, and the other one is private, confidential, one-on-one exchanges that, you know, I don't want everybody else to know about it, like, you know, HR-related matters or things to do with copyright or IP law or whatever else. Everything else is out of my inbox.
Interesting.
And I use social software tools instead, right? I live on social software tools, both internal and external. That's how I communicate. That's how I collaborate. So one of the other reasons why I did this, as my role of a social software evangelist, I wanted to prove to everyone that you could actually make use of these tools as business tools.
I'm
right?
guessing
not
you're not...
Just for
I'm sorry.
Hey, go on.
I'm guessing you're not talking Google Wave here.
Actually, believe me, I think that I was one of the very few people who saw extreme potential on Google Wave.
Because that kind of was the idea of Google Wave.
In a way, it was. But I think that, you know, Google Wave should have gone the area or the field of close niche team collaboration on a specific tasks. That was were really, really good at. Not just, you know, enterprise-wide or large community-wide kind of collaboration. That was too messy and not too many people getting on board of it. But for small groups, it was really good. You know, it was certainly the next stage of where our email should be going to. And unfortunately, it may not be, you know, may not be that after all.
So when you were trying to reduce the amount of emails you're getting, the only thing that I'm thinking about, if I tried to do this and I followed some of your rules that I read on Mashable, like don't reply and those types of things, how did the recipients handle that? Because many people would be offended and think this is just the way that business is done.
Why would I be offended? I am offended when people send me an email. Why should they? I mean, is there any written rule out in the corporate world that email is the de facto collaboration tool? No, there isn't. We just take it for granted because that's what we have been using for the last 40 years. And it's good, you know, 10 years ago, it was a good thing to use because it was probably the only option to use. 20 years ago, it was the only option. But nowadays, with the huge amount of options that we have available for better collaborative efforts, email is just one of the game, and it's certainly not one of the best of them. So my reaction is that usually what I do is I study my inbox quite a bit, right, on the kinds of interactions that I get and how I can move those conversations away. And in reality, surprisingly, and this is something that I found myself, is that the first people who want to get rid of email are the people who email me. Right, they're the ones who want to see somehow new ways of collaborating because they find themselves in trouble of having to respond to 1,400 emails after they come from vacation. When I come back, I've got zero. I'm productive from the minute that I come back from holidays.
Heaven.
And now we're just coming back from holidays, and everyone is, you know, my internal microblogs, I keep hearing and listening and reading to people who say, gosh, I just got back from 2-3 weeks and I've got like 1,400 emails. What do I do? And I go and tell them, straight delete them. You know, if something is really important, if something is really important, it will come back to you. If not, move on, because there's a great chance that while you have been away, that person had that question already answered.
So tell us what tools you use instead.
Okay. I use a mixture of tools. I use, obviously, internal tools. The main one that I use that I rely quite heavily is Lotus Connections, which is an enterprise social software tool that IBM happens to sell it as a product as well, you know. And the idea there, obviously, is that's where most of my internal interactions happen, right? And then outside of the firewall, I use a number of different tools. Some of them are related to IBM, like Lotus Live or another instance of connections on the IBM.com websites. Or I go where people are. You know, I'm a heavy user of Twitter. I'm a tweet machine, as most people will probably, you know, those who follow me, they will probably tell me, identify you as a tweet machine. Mm-hmm. I use Twitter quite a lot. I use a lot of file sharing applications, right? I don't share attachments on email. I think that should be banned, like, bang.
Well, it's a security risk, if nothing else.
Well, it depends on what tools you use. You know, I was listening there earlier on to what you guys were commenting on some of the social networking tools that you mentioned, and I would go like, oh, sorry, I don't have a profile in there anymore. It's just like I moved on from that.
You don't
one,
use
you know?
Facebook?
No, I deleted my account months
yes,
ago.
Yes.
And I don't feel that social pressure. If people tell me, why are you not Facebook? I say, like, because I don't need to. And they say, yeah, but, you know, we're all there. I say, well, that's your business. That's not my business, you know. And the main reason, actually, there's a reason why I'm not on Facebook. And the reason is that Facebook does not allow me to own my content, period. That's not debatable. I'm sorry. If it doesn't allow me to, you can go and bug off.
I agree with you.
Simple as that.
I agree
and
with you.
And excuse my French.
No, you're absolutely right.
That's how you guys.
Okay. Now, as far as the inbox, like one of the things you talk about is to tackle one area a week. How do you go about that as far as, because obviously there was a long process involved in sort of getting rid of the emails and getting to the point where you had very few emails coming into your inbox.
Right. Well, you know, the reason why I mentioned get rid of one set of tasks that come through email every week is because if you're trying to do them all at the same time, it becomes too messy. Right. And I saw that was my learning experience. And I cut off all of them from the very beginning, from day one. And it became a bit messy to control the flow and see how the flow would go itself. Right. So one of the things that I have learned over time is you study your inbox enough, you will see how there are a number of different tasks that repeat themselves over and over. Right. I mean, we all get newsletters. We all subscribe to newsletters. Now, honestly, how many of us do read them all? None of us. So why get them in the first place?
Yeah, I put them all in a pile.
If you want to get your news,
yeah,
exactly. If you want to go and get your news, you go elsewhere. You know, major announcements or corporate communications that you receive from top down, and say, well, my major corporate email news item right now is Twitter. That's where I get my news. I find out. It's interesting because I have got that example, for instance, where IBM recently made an acquisition of another company. And I find out hours before I actually got that email. Hmm. And that obviously went straight into my junk folder as a spam mail because I don't need it anymore. I already digested it through Twitter. That's where it came from. So the idea there is that if you can identify those groups of news items, of email items that come through to you, so newsletters, you can unsubscribe from them. Q&A, how many times have you received the same question from 40, 50 different people? And your answer is copy and paste. That's a waste of time.
Yeah.
Best way to do it is, you know, you have your own personal blog and you can go there and say, hey, I'm getting lots of these questions. I'm getting lots of times this same question. Here's the answer. And then from there onwards, what you just do is you share the link. Perfect. Ideal. Another one is project status reports. Why would I need to get attachments every week of how the project is going? Why don't you put that on a wiki where we can all contribute into how the project is going? Not just my project manager who tells me how, you know, what I already know about the project. I want to contribute as well myself and saying what works, what doesn't, so that we can work on whatever items, right? So a wiki for that is perfect. So those moving those project status reports away, that's another way, right? The news items, right? The announcements, that's a waste of time and space. You know, if you have got something to announce and you want people to engage, don't send an email that has got that lovely entry at the end of the email say, do not respond, this is a service machine. And I go like, what? Excuse me? And, you know, if I want to, you know, if you're going to share an announcement, be ready to get feedback back, right? And to engage with that feedback. And if you're using email, that's not the best way of doing that, right? So that's what I meant week by week. You know, every week, you know, people can evaluate some of those tasks and then group them and then move them away. Now, if you can do two of those or three of those tasks a week, in 2 or 3 weeks, you will be done. Because like I said, most of the interactions that we get, we can group them together into small chunks that we can get rid of one by one. That's how I eventually did it.
Did you send out an email explaining this to all your correspondents? Like, this is how I'm going to do it from now on? Or did they just have to figure it out? How did you make the transition?
I blocked it. I went into my internal blog and went into my external blog, and I cross-posted the same entry. And I was basically mentioning there that I had it. I had enough with it. And from there onwards, what I did was, you know, from here onwards, these are the tools that I'm going to be using to communicate and collaborate with people, social software tools. And that was it. From there onwards, obviously, there were a number of different reactions. Some of them were positive, some of them were negative. And the thing, though, that developed from there was that people were kind of curious whether the experiment will stick around. You know, here's this crazy guy who wants to get rid of email on an email-driven company, like most of large corporations out there, right? So this guy is probably bound to fail. Well, 2.5 years, I'm still here doing the stuff that I love.
And when he says here, he means the Canary Islands. He's living the life. It's not just here, like downtown Rochester. It's here in one of the most beautiful places in the world. So you really have figured this out, Luis. I'm impressed.
Yes, that's right. You know, that's one of the interesting things, because here's the big point, right? I'm sure that if I would be relying on email as much as I used to 10 years ago, working in a remote place like the Canary Islands would not be possible. Because one of the things that I would have from my manager, for instance, is that he would not have the visibility of what I do, right? And now, yet, every day, my manager knows exactly what I do through my microblogs, through my blog, through my activities that I share elsewhere, what I have been doing. So that gives him a great opportunity to find out what is exactly that I'm doing, how I'm working, and how I'm actually going ahead and moving with all of the various different tasks that I have. And it sounds like the perfect world and everything else. And to be honest with you, it is. That's where work happens nowadays. You know, we're working in multiple projects, multiple teams. I'm working on a team where I'm the only one in Europe. There's one other lady in Toronto, and then the rest of the team is in the US. Wow. And we work on a global project, right? Wow. So imagine communicating with people who have got 7-hour difference.
Now,
it's impossible to do.
Do you have to have these IBM tools to do it? I mean, do you have to have Lotus? Or could you do it just as an individual, not working in a big company?
Well,
with those
tools? I get that question many times, and to be honest with you, the reason why I'm using the IBM products is because I believe in them. A lot of people say, eating your own dog food. I prefer to say, you know, I'm drinking my own champagne. So I use them because I want to prove as well that they can be used as business tools. Now, if you don't have the opportunity to use these business tools from IBM or whatever else, it's still possible to do it. I mean, like I said before, the key message here is not to focus on the tools themselves, but on the behaviors and changing those behaviors, right? So for instance, if you want to share a file with a group of people, why would you want to do it on email? Why don't you use, you know, file sharing spaces like Dropbox, right, for instance, or right, Drop.io, for instance, right? There are lots of various different options out there. It's just a situation of people stopping for a minute and saying, you know, perhaps I should not send that email, and instead I should actually go and provide a much better collaborative environment for this information to go out, right? And like I said, you know, 10 years ago, I probably didn't have much option with just email or whatever else. But nowadays, you know, if we look into the hundreds and not thousands of social software tools that we have all available out there, I'm starting to question, is there an excuse? I don't think there is an excuse. It's just a matter of whether people would want to change. That's the real big thing, right? It's a cultural change that needs to happen. It's telling people that this change is actually inevitable, right? It makes us all much more productive. So why neglect that? Why not embrace it, kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. So just one last question for you. I have a friend who runs a really small company, and they've actually launched this idea where Thursday is no email day. So they're kind of starting down the path, I think, of something that you would like, where they say it's just not being productive. But the reality is, I think many companies, like you said, are email heavy, so they rely on email. So what would you say to the average person who is just feeling bombarded at work because they're getting too many emails, and yet their boss and their higher-ups kind of depend on that as a way to communicate?
As a way to communicate, or as a way to prove that you're doing your work?
Uh-huh.
It's a different thing.
Bingo.
A different way. You know, because one of the things that happens with those email behaviors is that in most cases, they use email to cover their ass.
Right.
That's a very sad thing. That basically means that you don't trust the business, you don't trust your colleagues, you don't trust your boss, and neither they do with you. So that's the best problem. That's the first problem that you need to look into. Why don't people trust me that I need to justify my workload? Once you move that and you address that, you're off to, you know, enjoy a new way of interacting with them, because they will be understandable of who you are, what you do, what you may be struggling. For instance, if you're preparing a presentation and you tell people on your microblog, for instance, or whatever else, that you're working on that presentation, then people will know that in 2 hours or for the next 2 or 3 hours, you will be busy, right? So they won't need to interrupt you. So the idea there for those smaller companies is to try to envision where they want to be from the perspective of what kind of web presence they would like to have, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, you know. And I keep saying this. This is a lovely quote from one of my colleagues, Suzanne Livingston, who says that, you know, you cannot bump into people in your inbox. And it's true. You know, if your business depends on making connections, email is the worst tool for it. And the reason for that is because it doesn't have clarity, it doesn't provide you visibility, it doesn't allow everyone to see what you're good at and to spread that message around, right? So for those people, it's to try to establish their corporate presence beyond the firewall, because that's where your customers are going to be, right? That's where the next frontier is. You know, we're all doing this internal evangelism on getting people to use these tools internally and everything else, but the real frontier, the real fun, so to speak, is actually there outside on the firewall where your customers are. You know, they're talking about your products already, so engage with them on about your products, right? That's how you want to get them to, you know, trust you, so you don't have to justify or cover your ass anymore.
Love it. Well, thanks for staying up late to chat with us. I am inspired to get my inbox back in shape.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
And you also write a great blog that people can check out at elsua.net.
That's right. That's my blog.
And I presume that you have a private corporate blog as well that you point people to internally.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So behind the firewall using connections.
That's
well.
One of the keys would be to have both a private and a public face so that you could have private work-related stuff. And then Twitter, right. Twitter is kind of a messaging, a way of kind of alerting and messaging people.
Twitter is more for me a way to build relationships with people, especially the people who I know.
Right.
Most of the times in Twitter, I only connect with people who I have met face to face or who I know or have followed for years, and who I want to develop deeper relationships.
Interesting.
That's how I use mostly Twitter. So it's interesting because I was listening to your comments earlier on how people use Twitter to basically announce what they're having for dinner and everything. Well, I like that because the next time that I meet that person, I know what to invite them for dinner.
You know what they like.
It solves me that problem. Or if they like to have coffee or if they like, you know. And I mean, I know this guy in San Francisco, he loves dim sum. I love dim sum. And we're just looking for an opportunity to hook up to have dim sum together.
See that works if you follow people you know, that you know and you like and you're going to meet up with. So that's good. It's a new way of thinking about Twitter. Yeah.
Right, exactly, because what it does is it allows you to enter their personal lives. You know, I mean, we all have got blogs, right? A good number of us have got blogs. And blogs, you can only share probably one or two thoughts a day.
Right, at best.
More elaborate, more interesting, but hey, Twitter allows you to enter around 20, 25 thoughts of your day, right? So it's a way of building better relationships with people by getting to know them who they are. And you know, I do appreciate people who actually follow thousands of people and they get followed by thousands of people. That's fine. That's another model of using Twitter. It's not my way of using Twitter. I prefer to have a way of connecting with people beyond the level of just broadcasting messages.
It's great. Really great to meet you and to hear about this, Luis. And now I'm going to go to elsua.net and read more about a world without email, one man's vision of a social workplace. Thank you, Luis. Great to meet
you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Wow, that is exciting stuff, I have to say, Amber. It makes me want to just throw it all out and start all over again.
No, I could talk to him forever, you know, just it's that type of voice where you just feel like, okay, if I spent an hour with him, my inbox would be totally under control.
Well, I think it actually makes a lot of sense because email is a first stab at something, right? And so we're learning, and just because that's what the first thing was doesn't mean it's the best thing. So we're learning how to use these tools over time, and I think it makes sense to periodically, maybe even all the time, think about it, reevaluate it, and say, does this work? Is this the right way? Is this what we should be doing? Or maybe there's a better way to be doing this.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And he has lots of great content on his blog, so I encourage people to check that out as well.
I have to really start thinking about how I use these tools. I never, you know, we're all so rushed, we never think about it. It's just like, oh, use this. Instead of making a coherent plan for here's how I want to communicate that's going to be efficient. And as we start a business here at Twit, that's something we need to think about too. We have all those tools in place. We have wikis, we have microblogs, we have blogs.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I was surprised my friend who runs this company, they decided to not, they're not allowing their employees to send emails on Thursdays. It's just a no email day.
Yeah.
And people are just supposed to focus on their work. And it's a really, I think it's a really neat idea.
I couldn't do that.
Well, I think we're in a different situation, but yeah, I couldn't do that. Some companies who are, you know, if they have projects and creative work, it's nice to have that data focus. And the rest of us, you know, you get interrupted every minute.
I think we need to go cold turkey, get rid of the whole, kill it all. Kill it all.
I'm with you.
We're going to get ready in just a moment. We've got Tech News Today coming up, as it does every Monday through Friday at 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 p.m. Pacific on live.twit.tv. But before we go, our video of the week. Amber, do you want to explain what we're about to see?
Okay, this is so strange, Leo, but I had to mention it. This is a song that has gone viral on YouTube. It's been out for a while, and it has just made it to the top 100 on the Billboard charts.
That's what's amazing. It's on the charts.
Yes, exactly. And people have probably heard about it. It's called the Bed Intruder Song. And it's from this guy, Antoine Dodson, who was interviewed by a news reporter after, this is terrible, someone tried to attack his sister.
But it was a weird thing. Like, she crawled in bed with her, and it was very strange.
It was really creepy. And so her brother, Antoine, was interviewed the next day by a news organization, and he just went off and just said, hey, we're going to get you to the guy who came into the bedroom. And he was very vocal, and it was, you know, kind of an interesting little clip. He was very passionate. And our friends, the Gregory brothers, who we love, who do the auto-tune, the news videos, decided to take his interview that was posted in full online and create a music video out of it. Now, this music video, now just try to wrap your head around this. This music video has, on the charts, it has actually done better than videos from, or songs from Katy Perry, other big artists.
That's not a big surprise.
But still, I mean, the fact that this originated from a news interview and then a YouTube interview, and the Gregory brothers did a good job with it, and they're splitting the proceeds with Antoine, so he and his sister and family can get out of where they live, and they're in Lincoln Park, move to
another. They're going to be wealthy.
Yeah.
So
hopefully.
My question is: has this ever happened before? Did the Hamster Dance ever make it to the charts? Nothing. Everything ever. How about the song?
Numa Numa Kid.
But that was already a hit. So that doesn't count. That was a real song.
Yeah, that doesn't count. No.
Our challenge to our listeners, send us an email. You can email Amber at twit.tv or Leo at twit.tv. And is was there ever another song on the charts that started online?
As a viral video. So it's a quirky song, but obviously people are buying it. They've had, I think, about 60,000 downloads and, like I said, 18 million views on YouTube.
Chocolate Rain. Did that make it to the charts? I don't think so. Amber MacArthur's at AmberMac.com. That's her blog. And don't email her because she's just going to do everything on her blog from now on.
Yeah.
She's also on Twitter, Amber Mac. And where else are you? You're on CP24 doing Web Nation. And, of course, let's not forget her very, very fine video podcast, which is actually kind of like this show, only better. It's called CommandN.TV.
Oh, Leo.
Go download it. Watch it. Subscribe. And here we go, ladies and gentlemen, Antoine and the Bedroom Intruder. Have a great week, Amber. We'll see you next time on Net at Night.
Bye, Leo.
Bye-bye.
He's climbing your windows, he's snatching your people up, trying to rape them, so you need to hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, because they're raping everybody out here. You don't have to come and confess, we're looking for you, we're going to find you, we're going to find you, so you can run and tell that, run and tell that, run and tell that. Left fingerprints and all, you are so dumb. You are really gone, for real.
The man got away, leaving behind evidence.
I was attacked by some idiot in the project. So dumb, so dumb, so dumb, so dumb. He's climbing your windows, he's snatching your people up, trying to rape them, so y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, because they're raping everybody out here. You don't have to come and confess. We're looking for you. We gon' find you. We gon' find you. So you